Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. It's coming up on 7 minutes after the hour. Just radio guys are the only people that have clocks. They have to tell you what time it is. I think that goes back to the days when Detroit couldn't make an automobile with a clock that would work more than, like, you know, 45 days into the purchase. But at any rate, it's Wednesday night. I was gone last night. Last night was a so-called best of, and apparently it was based on the listener feedback that I got. I apologize for my absence. You know, no good deed goes unpunished. I was gone for one night of the show, and honest to God, I feel like I was gone for a month. And it's not just because I love what I do here. I do that. I do love this. I've never worked harder at something or had more pleasure in something work-wise than what we do here. But I went down to Charleston last night. There was a Democratic Party event. I got to meet Governor Dean, Howard Dean. And I came away from my conversation with him just sort of scratching my head and thinking, man, did we get used in 2004. The Republican Party was scared to death of Howard Dean. Because to this day, he says what he's thinking. You might not like the answer you get to your question, but by God, you will get a straight answer. And cat noise. We get cat noise tonight. ISIS, shut up. God. But anyway, Governor Dean delivered a rousing address. He was a very personable individual to meet. I got my picture took with him. And invited him to come on the show and spend some time talking to real progressives, real family values people, real Americans, liberals, Democrats. And I think at some point we will probably have Governor Dean on the show. At least that's what he said. And I look forward to that opportunity. But honest to God, I'm gone for one night and I come back. It feels like I've been gone for a month. The world is exploding. I missed a day of Sammy Bad Breath hearings, and it's like missing two days of General Hospital back when Luke and Laura were together. And so I got my stuff together, and I got my stories together, and I'm going through the stack, and I don't have any more time, and it turns out that the printer ink cartridge has gone south on me and printed a whole bunch of nothing. oh, God, I love it. I love it. Doing live is so much fun. So all of that goes down, and then about a half an hour, 45 minutes ago, it turns out that everything goes on its head because Mrs. Bad Breath, Mrs. Alito, Sammy Bad Breath's mall, broke down in tears in the hearing. Now, one, there's no way you can convince me that this was anything but a staged event. And two, it's one of those Harry Truman moments now, isn't it? Mrs. Melito, Mrs. Scalito, Mrs. Machine Gun Sammy, if you can't stand the heat, sweetheart, stay out of the kitchen, and I'm not being sexist there. I'm not. Nobody, and oh, God, it reeked. It reeked of that Republican media manipulation that, God, they're so good at, and we're so far behind the curve we think we're on straight road. Oh, they're good at what they do. And bear in mind, it's under questioning from Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And he's asking Sammy Bad Breath about whether he's a misogynist or a racist and a bigot. The word bigot was thrown about. He's a Republican, daggummit, of course he's a bigot. Every Republican policy, if you take nothing away from this program, take this away. Every Republican policy has bigotry at its core. Let me see something here, honey. I got so, and I'm sorry. I guess this is lazy radio, and I apologize. When I've got a staff of 10 or 12 people, and it's not just the lovely Agnes and I slaving away over a hot mixing board, it may be a little bit different. But God Almighty, I got so sick to death of listening to that smarmy little SOB, Sammy Bad Breath, Machine Gun Sammy. I got so tired. Well, you know, God, it was like listening to an exegesis on legal principles delivered by Mr. Freakin' Peabody. Well, Sherman, if you understand that the tenets of Plessy versus Ferguson were clearly gotten wrong, but, you know, of course, there were many cases in which it was upheld. So, you know, yes, I respect precedent, and I respect stare decisis, but, of course, you must understand that, you know, the Supreme Court can certainly get things wrong. Oh, Jesus. So, all of that, but if there's one quote out of this hearing, it was earlier today, and he was being questioned regarding his membership about concerned alumni of Princeton, CAP, and he said about it, I can say virtually nothing. It was truly Sammy Bad Breath's Sergeant Schultz moment. Now, here is CAP, this unabashedly bigoted, misogynistic, prejudiced, racist organization of which he bragged about his membership in 1985. When he was already a full-grown lawyer and been out there working for a while. You know, not some wet-behind-the-ears law clerk trying to pad his resume. This freak was proud of his membership in CAP. And now he just can't remember it anymore, why he was a member, why he would have wanted to be a member, or what he did when he was there. Now, with that having been said, you get a choice. We all get a choice as Americans. Not that it matters, because a new Pew survey is out. Something like 16% of the American people are following these hearings. 16% of the American people are following the imminent collapse of our representative democratic-styled Republican form of government. Only 16%. God Almighty! What the hell's wrong with America? This is scintillating stuff. This is important stuff. It's more important than basketball. It's more important than which of only two teams in the NFL won't make the playoffs. It's more important than getting Pete Rose into the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's more important than the impending premiere of the next round of American Idol. 16% of the American people are following it closely. I had to make a trip over to Beckley today. What do I hear running on the old station whence this program got its genesis and from whose ashes this program has re-arisen phoenix-like? What did I hear? James Dobson's people have bought time on a radio station. Ask Senators Byrd and Rockefeller whether they're going to listen to Ted Kennedy or the people of West Virginia. Gee, really? Is that the choice here? Is that the choice, James Dobson? Is that the choice, buddy? Is that the choice about whether or not... What'd you say, James? What did you say, Dr. Dobson? That children should be beaten until they cry real tears? Do you think that West Virginia's in line with that? How about strip searching? Now, you're saying that, you know, when you present the choice that way, I mean, you just got to look at it honestly from a media standpoint. Ted Kennedy opposes Sammy Bad Breath. James Dobson is for Sammy Bad Breath. Sammy Bad Breath is for strip searching 10-year-old little girls. And I don't care how they try to spin it, he is. And he sanctioned it. And he said that it was all right by him. And I get in trouble talking about this subject on the show simply because my lovely wife sits over here and I see the color begin to rise in her face and she starts, you know, she gets that little sort of tick. Yes, you do, dear. The first night I covered this story, you cried. And it's okay, because that means you're moral, and that means you're ethical, and you're upstanding, and anybody who hears about this case that does not weep has something wrong with them. Anybody that hears about Sammy Bad Breath sanctioning the broom handle rape of a retarded man in the workplace and doesn't weep has something wrong with them. Anybody who hears about the case where Sammy Bad Breath sanctioned the cops shooting a young black man, 15 years old, who had $10 in his pocket, shooting him in the back of the head as he fled from them, and doesn't weep, has something wrong with them.
Has it ever occurred to you maybe that's why his wife got up and left crying? Because she realizes that he's guilty of everything that the senators are saying that he is?
I wish that was true, dear.
Maybe it is.
I wish it was true. No, it's not. I hate to differ with you, my love, but the fact of the matter is this crying jag came on during an examination by Lindsey Graham, like I mentioned at the top of it before I wandered off down whatever tangent I'm on now. It was under questioning by Lindsey Graham when she got up and ran out crying. Now, we already know that Lindsey Graham was part of a team that coached Sammy Bad Breath. We know that Lindsey Graham and several other of these filthy Republican senators gave him chapter and verse of every question they were going to ask. And they anticipated every question that a Democrat might ask. They invalidated themselves from the process. They should be removed from the committee and not allowed to participate any further. So she gets up just in time, just to get under the wire, just in time for the evening news cycle. And goes bawling from the room. So what are we going to get tonight? What's it going to be until tomorrow morning? Big bad Democrats make Mrs. Alito cry. Why do they hate America? It wasn't a Democrat asking the question. It was Lindsey Graham.
Sure, but if you watch her throughout the hearings, you can see her responses because she's sitting right behind her husband. And she looks like she's going to have kittens with crocheted tails. Throughout this, every time he starts trying to dodge these questions, you know, she looks like she's having a panic attack. And I think it finally all got to her. She knows he's guilty. Everybody says, well, you know, she could get a divorce or whatever. Maybe she can't.
No, she can't. She's a good Roman Catholic.
Exactly. So she knows.
I just don't know why they don't have 20 kids.
She knows her husband's guilty and she couldn't take it. So if it looked, you know, terrible on anyone, it looked terrible on him.
Well, no, it was done. It was done. These things don't happen. This is media manipulation. This was done specifically to make us look bad. Let's go to the phones. No? Oh, okay. Well, lost them. Sorry. Dadgummit. Okay. Well, so we've got all that. And, you know, she gets up weeping and, you know, she's got to leave the room. I don't think she, look, I don't think she should be allowed back in the room. That was theatrics, that was hysterics, done completely and entirely for the media. You don't think the media would be complicit in something like this? Wait a minute. Earlier today, and you can see this over at MediaMatters.org, everybody's favorite, what's Mike Malloy call him, a U-boat commander? Wolf Blitzer? Everybody's favorite media whore. Let's face it, that's what he is. He started this garbage earlier today saying that Democrats had reached an early verdict on the Alito nomination. Yeah. Now, meanwhile, let's let it come out of Wolf's own mouth. They've decided that the Democrats have reached an early verdict on Sammy Bad Breath. Early, an early verdict. Do you understand? Early, never mind. Listen to him.
Some Democrats are delivering an early verdict on Alito's performance. They say his testimony has been too vague and even contradictory. We'll be watching as the judge tries again to make his case in the hours ahead. It's 11 a.m. here in Washington, and Democrats are trying again to get more out of Judge Alito. Are they looking for answers or for the Supreme Court nominee to stumble?
You get that? Does that make you sick like it makes me sick? When you contemplate what a profound, profound duty is entrusted to journalists and the Fourth Estate in this country? You know, we call it the Fourth Estate for a reason. There are three branches of government, and there is one watchdog over, keeping an eye on them all, or at least supposed to. And, Democrats are prejudging it. What in the hell? The minute that Sammy Bad Breath was nominated, every Republican from here to Kalamazoo and onward stood up and, he is a fine jurist. He is a family values man with upstanding Christian principles, and we approve of him wholeheartedly. We have even put Crisco on his seats just before the hearing. What the hell is that if it's not prejudging? And yet we got to listen to Wolf Blitzer? Are they reaching an early verdict? Hell's bells, we're just asking a couple of questions. We just want to know if he really does get off on little 10-year-old girls getting strip searched. And it's not... Oh. It's not a canard. I've read the case. Doe v. Grudy. Go read it yourself. It's technical. It's boring. But when you get right down to it, Alito, this man who has been nominated to the Supreme Court because of his sublime ability to be wrong... This great dissenter, he says that even though the warrant in the case didn't name the child, even though the search warrant in the case didn't say that they sought to strip search anyone, male or female, adult or child, anything, that, you know, if you've got a search warrant, well, you can pretty much take it to its logical ends and... You know how it is. You want to get a hand down those undies in case she's hiding any crack down there or meth. Hey, I know that's nasty. Don't blame me. He said that. And he went on in his testimony to say things like, well, you know, if you don't strip search the children, then that means more drug dealers will use children to hide drugs. Oh, yeah. Really? He did. You know, at which point my eyes just sort of my glazed over, rolled back in my head, and oh, God. And yet, like I said, I had to make a little road trip today. And unfortunately for me, I got to hear a little bit of Flush Flimball, America's favorite junkie, the oxymoron. And he's running radio bits for the Ditto heads, making fun of Alito's sanction of torture. And he's running radio bits making fun of Alito's sanction of the sexual abuse of a 10-year-old girl. Strip search of a 10-year-old girl? Bug spray. You call it what it is when you talk about it. It is the sanctioning of sexual abuse against a little girl. And as if it makes any difference, you know, Flimball's babbling. Oh, and by the way, my friends, it was a female police officer who did it. I don't give a damn. Some cop tries to do that to any of my girls. And I got a feeling they'll be carting two bodies out. Because they'll have to kill me and Agnes both. Because I love my country, but I will not tolerate, nor should any American be willing to tolerate, some cop. And I got nothing against the police. But when you go get a search warrant, you don't even bother to, you know, no. And it is not the police's duty to feel up 10-year-old little girls. But of course, you know, she was a poor child. Sure, she was a poor child, no big deal. Now, you want to strip search a Trump? You want to strip search Paris Hilton? Hell will not hold the outrage that would come from that. You know what I mean? Sure you do. Tell you what, let's take our break. Your phone calls are always welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They laugh 'cause they know they're untouchable. Not because what I said was wrong. If it be rain, I will live by my own policies. I will sleep with a clear conscience. I will sleep in peace. Maybe it sounds mean. You asked for the truth and I told you through their own words they will be exposed. They got a solid case of the emperor's new clothes. The emperor's new clothes.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who worked night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. 1 minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Now, you guys are funny. Quick email in from our pal Bruce Birch of All Things Reconsidered fame and Fourth Estate Radio fame. He and his partner in crime, John Fox, down under, bring you Fourth Estate Radio every Saturday night at 10 o'clock Eastern. FourthEstateRadio.com. You can find out all you need to know there. But Bruce is a funny guy. Sammy Bad Breath is really Sammy the Squint, and he's married to Mrs. Squint. He does. Yeah. And it's not even that really impressive Clint Eastwood kind of squint either. But, you know, as I watched Mrs. Bad Breath leaving the building, Elvis, I kind of had to wonder if she's, you know, if she weeps at a friendly questioner asking her husband whether or not he's a bigot, which he is. If she weeps at that, you got to wonder, you know, being as how she's a Republican, being as how she enabled George Bush, probably twice. You gotta wonder if she's ever heard about what happened to Casey Sheehan. You gotta wonder if she's ever heard about what happened to any of the flower of American youth that were cut down in their prime in Iraq. You gotta wonder if she had any tears for them. Did she have any tears, do you suppose, at the thought of what her husband will do to desperate women all over America if he can only get his filthy backside into one of those leather-covered chairs in the Supreme Court? Did she have any tears for that?
Nah.
Because, well, I'm guessing she's kind of in that Barbara Bush camp. You know, the one where, oh, why should I bother my beautiful mind with body bags and how many and when they died? I mean, really, my beautiful mind. That's the way these people operate. That's the way these people think. You know, did she cry for any Katrina victims? A little closer to home, did she cry when she watched, or did she even bother to watch, the grief and horror unfold here in the Mountain State at our own little Katrina, the Sago number one? Did she weep for the miners? Did she weep for the widows? You know, I guess there are some out there, and I probably, you know, I occasionally get chastised for things I say on this program. And I might very well get chastised for even addressing this issue of her bawling and running from the room like Scarlett seeing Ashley with Olivia de Havilland, that character. See, I get into a metaphor and I just get... Oh, Ashley! Run screaming, you know, blubbering from the room. And I, you know, they think that, there are people out there that think that's not fair, talking about her. But you know what? She participated in a Republican scheme in which she stood up and made the story about her. There were fireworks today, you know, Ted Kennedy and Harlan Specter kind of got into it, and plenty of stuff. And then, under Lindsey Graham's fierce examination, she gets up and goes bawling from the room. Now, at some point, I imagine this will show up at canofun.com or perhaps crooksandliars.com, two great audiovisual sites that you might want to visit. But this is radio. You don't need a picture. You're a radio listener. You've got this big old brain in your head, and you can imagine it for yourself. You can see it for yourself. And you know. You know that this kind of stuff doesn't just happen. In Republican world, nothing just happens. They manipulate the media. They are complicit with the media. They are co-conspirators with the media. This was done for a purpose. Because you know what? There's been a lot of stuff brought out on Alito. He is a bigot. He is a prejudiced person. You know, the whole thing, his opening statement from a couple of days ago where he talked about how he had to walk through 12 feet of snow 12 miles to Princeton uphill both ways. And went on and on and on about his immigrant father who got to go to college and his mother went to college. He's a son of privilege and I first read the Constitution by lamplight after hewing logs all day. Well, thank you, Mr. Lincoln. This is a circus. These hearings are a circus. And frankly, look, I'm equal opportunity on this. Like I said a couple of nights ago, I would just as soon we did away with the opening statements by the senators. Let's get to the meat. I suppose if I was a United States senator and the one time that I have a chance to really have all eyes upon me, I'm going to want to grandstand a little bit for the folks back home. This is no time for grandstanding. This is no time for that whatsoever. This is a time for you know, we had another Joe Biden I love you moment, didn't we? Holy cow. I'm astonished with all. It's a dog. Look, it's wrestling. It's a dog and pony show. This rotten excuse for a member of the human race, Sammy Bad Breath, the guy who thinks that there aren't enough machine guns on America's streets, this guy who sanctions the child sexual abuse, that's what it was. This guy who sanctions abusing retarded people on the job. He's not going to answer any questions. He showed early on he's willing to perjure himself over the simple issue of CAP, the concerned alumni of Princeton. Well, to the best of my recollection, it's just repeating that same sorry line from Ronald Reagan's deposition.
Well, to the best of my recollection, it's my memory that I don't have a memory that I can recall or remember.
That's what we're dealing with. No, but there are going to be no questions answered. There is one thing and one thing only. And that is the final vote. Every Republican is on the Senate Judiciary Committee made up their mind the day his name was announced and quite possibly before, because now that we know that they were staging everything to begin with, I'm sure every Republican knew who the nominee was going to be once they had done the number on Harriet Myers, who was never intended for the Supreme Court in the first place. Once they had done that, they knew. And they knew right then and there that if they saw videotape of Sammy Bad Breath drowning kittens, that Republican 1 through Republican A through Z would sit there and say, I thought it was a touching moment when they showed those movies of him baptizing them kitty cats. They knew they were going to vote for him. Nothing, no evil that this man has perpetrated from under the folds of his black robe would stop them from voting for him. So one thing can happen, and that is the final vote. And if that final vote is allowed to take place, the Democratic Party in the Senate can go the hell home. Because if this man is not worth stopping the process for, no one is. No one. Let's go to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good. Glad to be back, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back, too. Listen, I have just a quick thought and a way to resolve this. I think the Senate Committee on, what is it, judicial appointments? What fancy?
Well, the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Okay. I think they ought to sit down and vote themselves the same power that every school board in this country has to go into executive session on personnel matters. Mrs. Alito, you will have to leave the room.
Yeah, they have that power. They have the power to go into executive session, but there's a...
Why don't they? Well, you know, what kind of, this is a soap opera.
Yeah, it is.
What it is, you know. Oh, you upset Mrs. Alito, you know. You know, I mean, you were talking about or those couple...
Does it smell staged to you, Wayne?
Yes. The couple clips you played.
Yeah.
CNN, or no, not CNN, 11, which is Fox, I guess. It's 59-something.
Yeah.
My channel, I guess.
Yeah.
Did the Democrats cross the line?
Oh, God.
That's what they're saying.
Ah, great googly moogly.
Right. Cross the line on what? Some dude that thinks it's okay to strip search children?
We weren't
across the line on somebody like that.
Oh, what a bunch of sleazebags, Wayne! It was a Republican
exactly.
Asking the question.
I know, believe me, God.
I despise him, but this is magical. This is magical media manipulation, Wayne.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. But I want to get above and beyond the sexual abuse. I just saw a very funny thing. I mean, because that's what this guy is sanctioning as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you're copping a feel on a 10-year-old little girl, whether you're looking for meth or crack or anything else, there is an element of sexual abuse to it.
I don't give a damn if it's male or female.
Right.
There's predators on both sides. I'm kind of watching with the voice turned down, Governor Joe's State of the State.
Oh, yeah?
You know. I know we got listeners all over the world, but this is West Virginia, and I'm real involved. Anyway, I saw a picture you'd really enjoy.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's sitting, Mike Oliverio, who's sitting beside him?
Oh, no.
Russ Weeks.
No. No, not Senator, Weeks-minded.
I'm a Republican. But then I remembered one of them claims to be a Democrat, doesn't he?
That's true.
Yeah.
Not that you could tell.
Don't pass my test.
No.
All right, buddy, listen, I'm going to let you go, man.
All right, take care, Wayne.
The rest of the world called in.
All right, have fun.
All right, bye.
Later. Yeah, the State of the State's going on tonight. And that was another one of the, that was another thing about the little Democratic shindig last night. All day long, the Republicans were having they were squealing like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. Why won't they let the media talk to Howard Dean? What is it that they're afraid that the media will say? Why are they? Howard Dean is not in the mainstream with West Virginians. He's not blah, 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 blah. You know what it was? You know what it boiled down to? Howard Dean was introduced by Governor Manchin. And Governor Manchin, at the outset, asked for a moment of silence for those who are gone from the Sago disaster and those whom they left behind in the wake of all that tragedy and misery and hell and death and destruction. And in that moment of silence, there was a desire to offer a degree of reverence and compassion for those families in that silence that should not, under any circumstance, given what they've already been through with the national media, that should not have been exploited, that's the only word for it, exploited, by the camera crews. Because here's the big secret, Howard Dean's words were well covered. I saw 2, 3, 4 different camera crews after the moment of silence. It's not that confusing. But no, not to a Republican, not to a Republican who couldn't, you know, what's your name? Ah, well, I really don't have a recollection of that. They can't tell the truth. They have to just make stuff up. And, you know, frankly, that disgusts me. An email from our friend Ron. Bob, the Bush family matron, Barbara, went to the Houston Astrodome to see the Katrina evacuees. She said that they, after all, were poor, and so they hadn't lost all that much. The Astrodome then was probably a pretty good place for them to live. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. I'm sorry, but yeah, after the beautiful bodies thing. Yeah, what was it? This is working out pretty well for them. Wasn't that what she said? There is a sociopathy at work in the Republican Party that I can't fathom. I mean, my God, you know, I'm a liberal, I'm a Democrat, I'm a progressive, and just as my, you know, I've done stories that have left my lovely wife sitting here beside me with tears running down her face, and they were running down mine at the same time. When you get your Republican registration card, do they immediately send you to the doctor and they excise your tear ducts and your morals and your conscience? Is that what it is? Because I honestly don't know. Let's go to the phones. Ed is with us. Hey, Ed, you're head on.
How you doing this evening, Bob?
I'm doing all right.
I tried to call in about 3 times last night. I just wondered if the station was on.
Oh, that was a rerun, Ed.
Huh?
That was a rerun.
It was?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do very good with it. But I wanted to, basically, Barbara Bush said that the people down there that happened to are better off regardless.
Yeah, living in the Astrodome.
Yeah, or whatever. I mean, that isn't the way I got what she said, and I heard what she said on there, but a lot of them just better off on what happened. So does that mean the death of the people, the relocation? What did she mean? But knowing most of those women like that are just political whores anyway, or prostitutes, better word probably.
You call it like you see it, Ed. It's all right.
But I'm listening to you and watching Joe Manchin at the same time.
Oh, God, that's got to be confusing.
It's not confusing to me. I feel like one of the rear end holes sitting on the outside looking in at a bunch of vultures. I'm looking at old Bob Kiss up there, you know, and he has about as much interest in what Joe Manchin has to say as a man in the moon.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel like, you know, where am I at in this process? Because you know that our ideas are not represented there. Not a one of them.
No, I saw, you know, when I was at this party shindig last night, I saw somebody else. I don't know why he was there. But I was getting in the elevator to go up, and he was coming out of the elevator on the way down. And, you know, that's the way it's going to work at the end of his life, too. Don Blankenship, you know, the chief sleaze of Massey Energy.
Right, I know who he is.
Yeah, he was there smiling with his little pencil-thin mustache and his little lackey following behind him. And one of my friends said, hey, look, I didn't know snakes could walk. But, you know, that's whose interest is represented. Okay, I mean, we might as well face facts.
Yeah.
But I had a chance to talk to a couple of Democratic members of the legislature, and, you know me, I just talk plain, Ed, and I just said, look, here's a few things you could do, and ticked off 2 or 3 things. I said, you know, you want to act like you care about the people of West Virginia, you do A, B, and C. And I don't think anybody ever talked to them like that before.
Yeah. Well, we used to, when we had our political action groups, we'd approach them with, well, you know what we wanted, and there was a couple guys from this county when he knew the unions was in control of the vote. they would give a whole lot.
Right.
But that's not there anymore. They're sold out, like, you know, Shirley Love with his 71,000 show. I mean, that's what shows that he took in from timber and coal and so forth. But he was talking about this Alito. That you talking about disgusting. I sat and watched a lot of that all day. And all day long, that guy's wife had looked to me like a rolling eye. But then, suddenly, when they attacked him, she had a crying eye.
But see, well, I mean, the thing is, when she busted out crying, Ed, she wasn't under attack from a Democrat. That was questioning from Lindsey Graham, a South Carolina Republican. That was pure wrestling. I mean, that was nothing but a dog and pony show. That was done strictly to try to smear the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, if they can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I say cooking good, you know. But you know what burns me more than anything? The Republicans are real good for calling hardcore names to people that oppose them.
Mm-hmm.
But our approach back to them are, we don't think he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
They're a damn liar.
That's right.
That's what they are, just plain-spoken damn liar. And it's about time that we lose this so-called dignity that we've got toward things and come out and stomp their daggone toes till their nose bleeds. And that's what I'm for, is that kind of activity. And if their wives cry, too bad. Leave them home. That's probably where they belong anyway, some of them.
Well, right. I mean, if you were going to a job interview, Ed, would you take the wife and kids with you?
I don't think, because she can't weld. would help me a bit, Bob. But anyway, I guess that's about all I'd say. I'm glad to hear from Wayne.
Yeah.
I need to call him sometime, too. But I'm trying to encourage my buddy to get involved in conversation. I think he'll listen a little bit, and he'll cuss and rant and rave with me, but he won't do it for the he's got some excellent ideas, and not just ideas. He knows what's going on.
Right.
And that's what we need to do, is expose this stuff.
Well, you know, little doses, Ed, little doses.
Yeah, well, I've been on him now for 6 months. I think I'll up the dosage.
Sounds good to me.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Bob.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for your time, and I'll call back there.
All right, sounds good. You take care, Ed. Good talking to you.
Same here.
All right.
Bye.
I like the way Ed thinks. Stomp their toes until their noses bleed. And, you know, we're not talking about doing any physical violence, but these people, the people that are, you know, the Alitos in the world, the Bushes, for God's sakes, all these Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee are violent at heart. We would not have over 2,000 American service personnel dead in Iraq if they weren't violent at heart. We wouldn't have over 100,000 dead Iraqi civilians, you know, men and women, children, if they weren't violent at heart. And you must be forceful with these people if you hope to have any impact. You can't, as Ed said, you can't just sit there and say, well, I don't think he's being entirely truthful. They giggle when we say things like that. They laugh. It's funny to them. We're funny to them. Human rights are funny to them. Clean elections are funny to them. People who aren't the same color as they are funny to them. And there is no dirty trick they will not pull. There is no dirty deed they will not do to advance the cause of their own power. Again, you have to stand up to them. Bush has fallen on his face in Iraq. The Chinese are getting ready to call a bunch of their notes in on us and conceivably destroy our economy. We have lost our good relations with almost every country that we cared about on the on planet Earth. Americans, a few more Americans are added to the rolls every day of people who no longer have health care in this country. People with guaranteed pensions are being told that they don't have them anymore. See? Do you see how they operate? And now, if not ever, if not now, when? This is a filibuster situation. This man must be stopped. They want to play the nuclear option? You want to do that, Bill Frist, in the middle of an SEC investigation? Come on, buddy, you do it. But we've got to make sure that the Democratic senators who are prone to playing enabler are out of the loop. And yet you have to wonder how many Democrats, no, how many people who say they are Democrats who are members of the Senate will vote for Sammy Bad Breath. If we don't filibuster this guy, we're done. Because that word gets bandied about emboldened. If this guy makes it to the Supreme Court, you talk about emboldened. The Bush administration, it will, you know, they'll call in Pat Robertson to start praying for, you know, a Supreme Court justice to drop dead. And the next guy they nominate, oh, well, you know, we're waiting for the real extremist. Then we'll filibuster. This is the real extremist. This is the judicial activist. This guy. Right now, right here. This one is the one you gotta stop. So we gotta take our break. We'll be back. And, you know, there's lots of news out there. I don't mean to get hung up on Alito, but... Holy cow. What a monster. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council. On last week's Fourth Estate Radio, Bruce had this to say.
Late Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting.
Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, get a backbone, for God's sake. Stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
I know all about you. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, welcome back. I'm not going to tell you what time it is because it's a daggum secret. And there it is, already up on the WashingtonPost.com. Martha Ann Alito bawling.
Judge Alito, I'm sorry that you've had to go through this. I'm sorry your family has had to sit here and listen to this. Are you really a closet bigot?
Is what Lindsey Graham asked him. And that's when the bawling started. Thanks to the gang in the Tom Hartman chat room for that quick link. I appreciate it. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Bob by Bob, how you doing?
Dandy. How about yourself?
Oh, well, I've been listening to you, buddy. I'll tell you. You know, I love the Alan Parsons Project. It's very nice.
We enjoy it, too. Thanks.
Now for some girl talk. I broke a nail last night. How about you? Bob, the moving finger writes, and having Rip move on, and know all your pikey and all your wit will cancel a single word of it, and they cancel half a line. Or change a single word of it. Can they cancel half a line? And I know you don't like Judge Alito. I don't like him either. However, calling him names.
He's a sleazebag, Jim.
But it's beneath your dignity to do that.
I have no dignity, Jim.
I said yours.
I have none where these people are concerned.
No, you have to have somebody.
They're beneath mine.
Okay, well, listen, this is free speech here. I'm just giving you the benefit of my opinion, okay?
That's sure.
That's all I'm trying to do. And I've said this to you before, that when you start calling these people names, you're putting yourself on their level. That's just my opinion. I think you're above that. And
well,
I think your level of journalism is above that.
Well, and, I appreciate that, Jim, but...
I don't get off on these Jonathan Edwards episodes. I know you're under stress, and I know you're frustrated by some of the stuff. I am, too. I mean, I saw our inspector crawl all over Ted Kennedy this afternoon when Kennedy wanted to go into executive session, and it was ugly.
Yeah.
The whole thing was just ugly, and... You know, he either is or he is going to be confirmed. And I hate to tell you this, but in all likelihood, he will be confirmed.
Oh, I think he's clearly going to make it out of the Judiciary Committee. He doesn't have to be confirmed. We do have the filibuster, and if we don't use it now, it's over.
Well, they're thinking about it, but I don't think they're going to do it. Really. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but from what I'm able to observe, they're not going to use the filibuster against him. I just don't think they are. They don't look like
because we don't have any guts.
Well, I don't know whether it's lack of intestinal fortitude or whether it's for somebody trying to make a deal or whether it's the caliber of some of the Democrats who are supposedly Democrats, but it does not look good to me as far as keeping this man out of First Avenue or the Supreme Court. It just doesn't. I'll be honest with you. I was just basically this. My attitude toward the whole thing is expect the worst, but hope for the best.
Well, I understand. You know, that's, you know, I'm sort of a pessimist that way. That way, if things come out the way I expected, I'm not brokenhearted. But if they come out better, you know, I'm a happy guy. But the thing is here, I don't think most people realize, Jim, this is the end game of the Republic.
Well,
nominations like Alito's are the end game of the Republic.
But, you know, these people don't live forever.
No, they don't. But the thing is, when Jim...
And history is a pendulum, Bob. It swings both ways.
But history is replete, Jim, with democracies and republics that never recovered. I don't know of any that ever came back. The Athenian democracy devolved into oligarchy and never recovered. The Roman Republic devolved into empire and never recovered. And there, time after time after time, there are those.
Well, unfortunately, And I hate to say this, but there are days of the Roman Empire were its greatest, and when it did the greatest good for the greatest numbers of people. And the worst thing that happened to Europe is when it fell.
Well,
Europe's womb became its tomb in 410 B.C. when the Visigoths sacked Rome.
You know, we
look what happened to Great Britain when the Roman Empire fell. The culture there was literally murdered by the by the etymology that survives of that period.
Sure.
So, you know, the Roman Empire, as bloody and awful as it was greatness. And wherever there is greatness, there is also the possibility of great error. But I point out to you again that history is like a pendulum. It swings one way and it comes back the other. This way it's not going the way we want it to.
I tend to disagree with you, Jim. I don't think the pendulum swings back on this. I understand the pendulum theory in law and in history and in a lot of, but mostly where cultures are concerned, cultures rise and cultures fall. They don't, you know, the pendulum doesn't swing back and they rebound.
Well, you know, nations are like people. They are biological entities. And they have their birth, they have their growth and development, and they have their full maturation, and then they have their demise.
Yeah,
that is the way that, you know, perhaps America's going.
But I hate to be sitting here, Jim, watching the end of America, because I was raised patriotic. So were you. I was raised to love this country, and this country is dying before our very eyes.
Bob, this has been going on a long, long time.
It hasn't been going on a long, long time before my very eyes, though, Jim.
I think it has.
No, not before my eyes. Well,
Your eyes have just begun to see it.
No,
but
I mean,
I've begun to see it a little bit longer than you have.
But what I'm getting at here, there is an I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. There's an opportunity to change things. We could change things. 19% of American people, are watching this. Or 16% are paying attention to these hearings. That tends to tell me that more of us than them are paying attention. If we raised enough hell, we could at least attempt a change.
Well, I'm not sure if that is going to happen with just 16%, because you're talking about 16%. Are you talking about 16% of the people who are actually physically viewing this?
16% of the American people, just 16% are even paying attention to this. That tells you that in large part the Dobsons and Falwells have failed on this. We haven't, you know, if not now, when? If not him, who?
Now what do you mean by that? I don't understand.
16% of the American people, that's all that's paying attention to this.
Well,
how
does that impact upon the success or failure of the Dobsons and Falwells?
Well, that means...
Understand the connection.
Because they have been... My God, how much money have they expended trying to get the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful to come out and support this monster? They have failed. We have an opportunity now, because more progressives, more liberals, more decent people are paying attention to this than they are.
I wonder what percentage of the American viewing people watch the OJ trial.
Heck of a lot more than 16%.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people, to tell you the truth, see these people get in there and ask these questions. And this guy sits there, and, you know, he's basically unruffled by any of the stuff that they hit him with.
Well, of course he is.
The only person who showed any type of emotion today was his wife, and, you know, I don't know what the deal there was, but, I mean, you know, anytime somebody, you know, bursts from a room and has to be put in a holding room, as they said it, you know, it's going to gain media attention. That's just
Well, and Jim, you do know what it was about. I mean, you probably don't like to admit it, but you know this was a media stunt. You know this is what they excel at.
Well, yeah, I know, but, I mean, I didn't say it wasn't, but I just said, you know, it is the kind of thing. Nothing exceeds like excess.
True enough.
It is true enough.
Yeah.
I didn't even call to talk about him. I wanted to talk about this business about how much attention this is drawing from the real problem, like you know, Bush's wiretapping and the ability of his agency to do this. And,
you're absolutely right.
And also Mr. DeLay and what's happening with these people. But I've got some facts for you about the National Security Administration that
okay.
you might find interesting.
Absolutely. Bring them on.
And there is a city in Maryland. I used to live in Maryland, and I've lived all over that area. It's called Crypto City. Okay, and this is the headquarters of the NSA. Now, this is an incredible place. It really is. Crypto City's yearly consumption of electricity is 409,005,840 kilowatt hours, carried over 660 miles of wires, and it equals that of Maryland's capital, Annapolis. And with over 6 acres of computers, 25 tons of air conditioning equipment pumping out over 6 billion cubic feet of cool air a year, and more than 500,000 light bulbs to power, the city burns up 54 million kilowatts of electricity a day. And can you imagine that? One agency?
Yeah.
That leaves the secret city with a shocking monthly electric bill of nearly $2 million. $2 million a month they paid out in electricity, which makes it the second largest user of electricity in the entire state. In 1992, Crypto City consumed 5.5 trillion BTUs of oil, electricity, and the equivalent of 33 million gallons of fuel oil. You know, that's a lot of firepower being directed by one agency of the government now, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And, you know, it's just incredible how that agency has developed from a mere fledgling thing back in the end of 1945. Now it's just it's really a monolith. And, you know, it's and where it stops, I don't know.
Well, there's a whistleblower out there now, and I hope they don't run him off to Guantanamo. Russell Tice is the person who, he was a specialist in special access programs.
Right.
They called them Black World programs. He was part and parcel of the sneak and peek, the spying, this electronic eavesdropping on all of the American people. And, you know, he's coming out, this is from an ABC News story, he's telling it. He says he is one of the sources for the New York Times story. He's deep in the bowels of everything you just described.
Well, I'll tell you something. This agency, for example, its overall budget in 1995 was $17,570,600,000, to which they received in 2001, an additional $7,504,000,000. And they employed 58,000 people, and more than the CIA and the FBI combined, and another 25,000 are employed in its other central security services. We're talking about listing post people, contract people, stuff like that. It's just, as they say, it's just bigger than both of us, isn't it?
Well, it's not bigger than the nation. When we get to the day where one governmental agency is bigger than, you know, we the people, it's not we the people anymore.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm driving at, because I didn't call you to quote a lot of figures, light bulbs and kilowatt hours of electricity, but I mean, to me, this is symptomatic of the times in which we live.
Yeah. Well,
and basically, it's an expansion of it's like the expansion of a red giant star. And I just want
and it's all consumptive.
And at what point will it expand to the point that it just collapses on itself? You know.
Yeah, and it's going to be ugly when it does, Jim.
But I mean, like I say, nations rise and fall, and this could be, you know, the denouement of America as we know it.
Well, we're going to.
You know, that's all there is to it.
It could be, Jim. It could. God, I hope it's not. I hope we can reclaim it.
Read Marcus Aurelius.
I have.
And read some of the things that were written, you know, at the end of the Roman Empire. And who knows what will take our place? I don't know. But, I mean, we have no lease on life, and we have no guarantee of continued existence as a nation, not even physically as a continent, well, the way the Earth is changing right now.
That's all true. Jim, we got to hit the break.
Okay.
Take care now.
Out here.
Bye now. All right, when we come back, more of your calls. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Think I've got crack in my underwear. Oh, God. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's go straight to the phones. Fritz has been waiting a while, and I hate to wait and make people wait. Thanks for your patience, Fritz. I appreciate it.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good.
I'm going to get on this phone here.
Oh, okay.
And I got to cook while I'm talking.
Don't hurt yourself.
I'm getting some shrimp up here with some olive oil, parsley, and garlic.
Oh, man.
For some pasta.
I'm up for the leftovers.
Yeah, I know. You didn't want to hear that, right? You know, let me take a pragmatic and a philosophical approach to this. Pragmatically, I think we all got to get on the phones and on the email. I've called my Democratic senator a whole bunch of times expressing my opposition. And I'm calling all my friends and urging them to do the same. And I think everybody's got to get on the horn to those Democrats and give them some spine.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, Bob. This is the one we have to do at this time.
Let them, you know, and
there's no more, you know, we're saving this for the right time. This is the right time. I really believe that.
This is it. And the thing is, we've got to let them know. I mean, because, you know, if that Focus on the Family ad that's running in Beckley that I heard today, Fritz, if that thing is running in, if that thing's running all over the country, and we know it is, then we've got to call our Democratic senators and let them know that, for God's sakes, we've got their backs on this one.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is the time. You know, I just started reading Fooled Again, Mark Crispin Miller's new book.
Yeah.
You know, and if anybody doubts, as you were discussing with Jim, that these guys are capable of high drama, you know, don't doubt it. These guys will do anything. You know, in this whole episode, I didn't see it myself, because I was working, but this whole episode where she apparently started bawling, his wife started bawling when they asked him about racism and sexism,
yeah,
and left the room.
Yeah, and that was, and again, we can't reiterate enough, Fritz, that was under questioning from Republican South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
That was all planned. Give me a break. Come on, I don't trust these guys as far as I can spit. This is absurd.
Well, they were part and parcel, Fritz, of of coaching him on all the questions and on what the Democrats would ask. This is all wrestling.
And then, you know, that conflict of interest of having a Judiciary Committee member coach the guy. I mean, come on, is that ridiculous? And nobody's yelling about this.
No.
And people ought to be jumping up and down and pounding their fists about this. This is ridiculous. This is a conflict of interest for Lindsey Graham.
Well, my God. I mean, look back, and maybe I'm making too much out of it, Fritz. But, you know, look back to that story I had a couple of nights ago about the religious freaks who went in and oiled up the chairs.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I heard that one. I couldn't listen to you live, so I listened to your show yesterday, and when I heard that, I just about was white-knuckled, you know?
Yeah, well, anybody else, you know, Cindy Sheehan got carted away for sitting on the sidewalk of the Capitol, and these people are allowed to just trespass into hearing rooms and put God knows what on the seats?
Right, and if you had gone in there, they would have stopped you immediately. They would have said, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, this process has been corrupted from the get-go.
It has, Bob. You know, let me get philosophical now for just one second.
Okay, go ahead.
I think these people don't know what love is. I think everybody ought to go out and watch March of the Penguins. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't.
But if you watch that film, you'll come to the realization of the grand intelligence, the deist intelligence that exists in biology, and the fact that in nature, the operant principle of altruism. First of all, that movie proves Darwinian natural selection to the T, although I'm sure that you know, the freaks don't see it.
Oh, the freaks came out and said it was an argument for intelligent design.
Oh, no, it's a perfect argument for natural selection, of course. You know, as if you're thinking the way they are, you can twist it in any way, shape, or form you'd like.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but what I see in it is altruism. And I think in order to really love, you have to be altruistic. And I don't see any altruism in the Republican Party or in any of those guys. It's all self-serving. It's all lobbying. It's all, what can I do for me? You know, and Alito was right in that crowd. And if you're not if you don't know what altruism is, you don't know how to serve your fellow man. You know, and that's what is lacking in this whole crowd. There's no interest in serving their fellow man.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about, Fritz. And this may be a little bit of a lame example, but last night at the shindig I attended. You know, there were nice little hors d'oeuvres and crudités and sliced fruit and stuff, and it's all just laid out lovely and this was a Democratic function, okay?
Right.
And I looked at one of my friends and I said, I wonder if anybody in this room has stopped for a moment to think how mind-numbingly drudging that it is to sit there and just cut cheese cubes and slice pineapples and the thing is, you know, the catering staff were walking around bringing new bowls in, taking the old bowls out, you know, the nice white uniforms, the toques on the heads and all of that, and
yeah.
I said, I'll bet you a dollar not one of those individuals could go to the doctor if they're sick.
You're probably right.
And I think that way, and I think about people that way. And this was a Democratic gathering, and they had a tip jar at the bar, but not at the not at the food table.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll bet you're right about that. And you know, that really should make everybody heartsick, because you know, if you're really going to call yourself a Democrat, that's what you should be about. You should be about serving your fellow man, and you should be about altruism. And that's why, philosophically, if we want to get philosophical, I'm not going to talk about the Roman Empire. I'm going to talk about what I see in nature and what I see lacking in this crowd in Washington and in Sammy Alito.
Yeah.
And that's philosophically why I don't want any part of the guy. You know, I saw
he's
his
mean
class, Bob, because I went to an Ivy League school too, and it wasn't Princeton, but I saw his kind. You know, and they were rude and they were arrogant, and I couldn't stand them then, and I can't stand them now.
Well, what did he say about when he was at Princeton, that he saw a lot of people who were misbehaving?
Yeah, right. And like, I was one of those.
Yeah, well, yeah, because yeah, he wasn't. He's not talking. You know, he's not talking about the people throwing keggers.
No, yeah. he's talking about Vietnam War protesters.
Yeah,
he's talking about, because it was that era. You know, it was the people who saw the United States complicit in Vietnam and who saw American corporations complicit in that whole enterprise and were protesting against it.
Right. And
those are the people he thought were misbehaving, patriots.
Right. And in his mind, that's bad behavior. So, and we know that when it comes to standing up against American hubris and American power and American excess, you know, we patriots, good word, we know how he thinks about us, and we know what he's going to try to do with the law. He's going to try to use the law.
Use it against us.
As a cudgel.
That's right. Yeah, because we're misbehaving, folks.
Yeah.
That's it, Bob. Yeah, you got it. I mean, that's laying it out plain and simple. And please, everybody, get on the horn to your Dems and give them back. Bob.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's all, and it's so easy to do because they've got that really cool phone number up there.
Yeah, there's also, you can go to senate.gov. And they'll give you, you can download the Senate phone list. I have it on my computer.
But you can
download a PDF. Go do it. It'll
but even for people who are too busy or whatever to do that, Fritz, it's worth remembering the Senate switchboard is 800-SOB-USOB.
Right. 800-SOB-USOB. But if you got the time, go get your own senator's number. It's just an extension. It's 202-224 and an extension, four-digit extension.
Exactly.
So get their voicemail and leave them a voicemail.
Exactly. And you know, I've been calling during the day and talking to the friendly folks that answer
right,
the phone, being
right.
Really nice, really sweet, really gentle, and saying we've got your back if you'll just stand up to this punk.
Yeah, and they're very nice, and they'll listen to you when they swear that they'll pass it on to their senator.
Yeah.
So please just do it. It's easy. And we need it. Please. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Fritz. And hey, enjoy your shrimp.
Thank you. I will.
Take care. Bye now.
Take care of yourself. Bye.
All right. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. It's time for our Cup of Joe report. We'll be back. Your phone calls are always welcome at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. And your emails, equally welcome, bob@headonradio.com. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Of the numerous issues we're dealing with today, none are so important to this observer than the creation of an accurate and accountable election process. If we believe, as we say we do, in the idea of self-rule, that is, the idea that the citizens of a nation have a right to determine their own futures, as opposed to, say, a king or a dictator, then we owe it to ourselves to create a system that accurately reflects the desires of the citizens. Unfortunately, too many of us would prefer to be as uninvolved as possible, or worse, not to be involved at all. Politics, however, like nature, hates a vacuum. There will always be those who want to rule over other people for their own benefit. If we decide we don't want the power, they'll be perfectly happy to take it. Saying you want no part of politics will eventually condemn you to being a second-class citizen, or worse, a subject. You can find yourself losing a son or a daughter in a war we have no business fighting, or die in a mineshaft because the government cares more about the mining company's profits than they do in the lives of their employees. For those of us who are active in politics, we need to understand that however important other issues are, and they are, this issue must take priority. According to the Declaration of Independence, a government's power derives from those governed. But if instead our officials are chosen by a machine programmed by a corporation, we will lose our voice altogether. because elected officials answer to the will of the citizens. Kings and dictators do not listen to subjects and slaves. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Back. Oh, all right. 19 and a half minutes before the hour. See? I can't stand it. I got to do that. In conversing with Jim, well, first of all, a little email. Our friend Gene writes and says, I'm sorry, Jim, it's about time we got to their level. He says, you're right, history is a pendulum, but if we do come back into power, we will have to be as dirty as them in order to take it back. We either hit them on their level now, or we will be as evil as they are now. I just want to see some fight. I agree with Fritz. Call your senator. Senate.gov, he's absolutely right. It'll point you to email portals for your senators. You can phone, and I'm not giving marching orders here. I'm not that kind of person. But I did it. Fritz did it. Other people are doing it. We must let our Democratic senators know that we have their back if they stand up on their hind legs and filibuster this rotten, dirty, sexual abuse sanctioning broom handle rape? My God. If you put it to America bluntly and you said, is that part of your mainstream American values, letting mentally challenged individuals in the workplace be sexually harassed? Anybody, show of hands, anybody here ever seen the movie, read the play, read the short story by Daniel Keyes, wasn't it? Flowers for Algernon? Anybody ever read that? The guy, he goes for, and they do the search, and he's a genius, and then he slides back into it, and it's tragic, and it's horrible, and he works in a bakery, and that was when I read the Perillo versus World Flavors Inc. decision. That's immediately what I thought of. Flowers for Algernon. Because workplaces can be cruel. Just like a schoolyard can be cruel. And, I know it doesn't pass muster with the right-wing nuts. But I want to know that there is a that the judicial branch will be there to call a wrong when it is presented to them. Again, all these cases that we're talking about with Sammy Bad Breath, this thug, almost all of these cases are dissents. This guy dissents more than just about any other circuit judge in the country. This guy dissents from cases written by Michael Chertoff, Skeletor, the head of Homeland Security now. That guy, the Skeletor is like, to the right of Mussolini, and this guy doesn't think he's mean enough. And I don't want to, Bob, you don't understand the legal nuances of it all. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And by the way, while we're at it, screw a nuance. I don't need nuances when I see that the cops in the Grudy case brought along a female officer with them because they anticipated strip searching females and little girls. And yet they didn't bother to put it in the warrant because they knew that a judge would look at it and go, you're not groping up no 10-year-olds. Ain't going to happen.
I thought in a situation like that DHHR was supposed to be present and they were supposed to remove the child.
That's a matter of state law. It varies from state to state. But good practice, or as Arlen Specter described it in the hearings today, best practices would say, yes, you take a child protective services worker along.
Or at least take the child to the emergency room.
Well, but we're living in Republic world, and we don't want that ER bill, dear.
So it's okay for anyone to come into your home and...
As long as they got a badge and a gun. Yeah. I mean, I'm not making this up. It is what it is. Talking about the business, because it's true what Jim mentioned also. While we talk about Alito, there's a bunch of other stuff going on. This ABC story, you got to wonder how far behind weeping Martha Ann Melito this will be. This gentleman... Russell Tice, who blew the whistle and was one of the sources for the New York Times story. Now let's get to the stuff that the wingnuts will be all over by morning first. And this is the final paragraph of the ABC News story. The NSA revoked Tice's security clearance in May of last year based on what it called psychological concerns, and later dismissed him.
Oh, Jesus, he said he hates his mama. No, it's his daddy he hates, and what he wants to do with his... Oh, no, not with the... Oh, the calling doctor... Oh, he's crazy.
If you are caught, the secretary will disavow all knowledge of your actions. You understand? Welcome to the gulag. Lord, don't you remember during the heyday of the Soviet Union how, you know, we'd have these terrifying stories of dissenters in the Soviet Union being sent to a psychiatric hospital because clearly they were unstable. Sorry, that's a German accent. I don't have the Russian one handy right now. But that's how they did it. Oh, he's crazy. Yeah, he doesn't like the workers' paradise. He's crazy. Look here. Oh, Russell Tice? Oh, hell, he doesn't love the capitalist paradise. He's crazy. Russell Tice was way deep on the inside. And in May of 2005, now wait a minute, ooh, fun with math, the New York Times knew about this story for how long and sat on it? Before the 2004 elections? And Russell Tice has confirmed that he was in fact one of the New York Times sources? Oh, look, May of 2005, they found out he'd been blowing the whistle. And you see, how many times have I said it? Somebody, a lot of people, these neocon weirdos with no senses of humor, they read Catch-22 and they thought it was a field manual. You know, you'd have to be crazy not to love what we're doing at the NSA. You don't love what we're doing? You're crazy. This is that. What did Russell Tice say? He says the mentality with regard to the, you know, let's spy on everybody program, you getting this, Agent Fred? Jihad. The mentality was, we need to get these guys, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get them. Now, obviously Tice knows what he, I mean, this is fairly, he said, the technology exists to track and sort through every domestic and international phone call as they are switched through centers, such as the one in New York, and to search for keywords or phrases that a terrorist might use. Again, may I point... Well, okay, he goes on. If you pick the word jihad out of a conversation, jihad, jihad, Uncle Jed! The technology exists that you focus on that conversation and you pull it out of the system for processing. Oh, God, why did you saddle us with a bunch of ignoramuses? I refer you to an earlier diatribe on my part where I noted that the terrorists know we're listening. They're not just going to have a phone call talking about the brand new shiny jihad. They're going to call jihad fudge brownies. And they're going to call dirty bombs Plymouth Valiants. And they're going to call hijacking missions. Come on, work with me here. A hijacking mission is going to be a... What? Pooper scooper, okay. And the NSA is not going to have a clue, because this is the kind of stuff that no computer cipher can bust, because it's arbitrary, purely arbitrary. I listen to Bob. He's telling jihadists how to do it. No, damn it! They already know. And so Agent Fred is sitting in the bowels of some NSA hall... Not know, and you know, he just heard me say jihad. And so as a consequence, they're looking for they're listening for the word jihad. They're listening for the word hijack airplane. Meanwhile, there's a conversation going on about Aunt Mabel's fudge brownies that she's bringing over in the Plymouth Valiant. As soon as she gets done with the pooper scooper. It's all gone by the boards. There is no replacement. And, you know, we're all guilty of this. We don't boil water on the stove anymore. If we can avoid it, we put it in the microwave. And we think that somehow that's a replacement. We rely falsely on technology when the greatest computer in the world happens inside each and every one of our skulls. And what we don't need a bunch of guys listening to phone calls. We need Ian Flemings. We need Ken Follett. We need the Tom Clancys. And they need to be in government. Never mind this Republican meme about how good men won't want to sit on the judiciary because of what they have to put up with through the confirmation process. Screw that. The good people are already gone from intelligence. Because we thought we could replace them with the Uniblab 9000. 10,000. By the way, for the West Virginians in the group, Jay Rockefeller's Senate office phone via our good friend Fritz. Thanks, Fritz. Area code 202-224-6472. 202-224-6472. Learn it, know it, and in the next few days, wear it out. Tell him you're behind him in standing up to this little right-wing liar. Yeah, I'll call him a liar because he is one. I have virtually no recollection about the concerned alumni of Princeton, and yet when he was a full-grown man, 35 years old, he brayed about it and ballyhooed it on his application. The testy exchange today between Ted Kennedy and Arlen Specter had to do with going into executive session so that they could subpoena records relating to concerned alumni of Princeton. Do you understand that this man has committed... Oh, God, here we go again. You do remember the deposition of Bill Clinton and the filthy little pornographic thing, you know, about the thickness of an old Sears catalog that Ken Starr produced, right? And it was he was indicted over alleged perjury over whether or not he had a consensual sex act. Okay, that, you remember that? Well, we maintained on our side of the aisle that what a person did consensually, sexually, was pretty much private business and not the business of the nation, and not an impeachable offense. But the Republican Party said, "Screw you, America." When 70+% of the American people were saying they did not want the country torn apart with that damned impeachment proceeding, the Republicans said, "Screw you, America." We hear this guy is a real stud, and we want to find out all about it, because we hate him. If we could get away with killing him, we would. That's the Republican mindset. And so they had their little impeachment over a consensual sex act, and now, on two consecutive occasions, John Roberts sat and he was on the damn board of the Federalist Society, and he couldn't get away from them fast enough, and he sat there under oath in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee and said, "I don't remember for the life of me. Federalist Society? Is that a bowling league? I don't remember." And now we've got Sammy Bad Breath, Machine Gun Sammy Alito, under oath, again, in front of the Senate of the United States, saying, "Well, you know, I bragged about being in the conservative... I don't remember. You do remember, Sam, and you, because it is a bigoted, misogynistic, sick organization, and you were proud to be a member. You know, they had little black and orange tiger-striped robes for the Princeton Tigers. You know, they didn't go full bore for the sheets and pillowcases, but it was the same damn mindset."
Could it be, I mean, look at it from another point of view. Could he be suffering from dementia? So, I mean, you really wouldn't want to judge that.
No, he's not demented. No, this is conscious business, dear. This is out-and-out, bald-faced lying.
I understand that, Bob. That was sarcasm.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
I get used to the emoticons and, you know, you didn't...
No, that was sarcasm, bing, dear.
Yeah. Oh, he's demented all right. He's crazier than a sprayed roach. When you think it's okay to give a grope to a 10-year-old little girl, badge or no badge, That's pretty demented. And it's the kind of dementia that gets you... What do the wingnuts say they want? They want to destroy Social Security. Now, what did he talk about today? He talked about how court cases, Supreme Court decisions can be treated as stare decisis for years and years and years until a more enlightened court comes along and realizes how badly decided and how wrong that case was. That's not about Roe versus Wade, baby! It's not about Roe at all. That's about the enabling legislation of the Social Security Administration. If this guy writes opinions that says the Americans with Disabilities Act is unconstitutional, thank God he did it in a dissent, but if he believes that's unconstitutional, guess what? So is Social Security. Why is that so hard to understand? Holy cow. Listen, your phone calls, your emails, they're always welcome. You know that. Like I got to tell you, but you know, there's new listeners and stuff. Bob@headonradio.com. Phone number's 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Jump right in if you've got a yen for that. I'm Bob Kincaid. Isn't there a white knight upon a fiery steed? Late at night, I toss and I turn and I dream of what I need. I need a hero. I'm holding out for a hero till the end of the night. He's gotta be strong and he's gotta be fast and he's gotta be fresh from the
the Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Fourth Estate Radio. Bruce had this to say.
Latham is a member. Latham is a member of the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee. Okay. He was arrested and charged with offering to engage in an act of lewdness.
What?
Based on that one charge, I'm thinking he didn't offer to hire a prostitute. It sounded like to me that he was just like coming on to the guy.
Well,
maybe saying to him that he would give him a, you know, a free something or another.
Well, I want to know if George Michael was in there for the meeting. Join us 10 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night for Fourth Estate Radio. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Thanks for sticking around and welcome back to this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. We do have at least one prayer meeting item. Try to save it maybe for the last part of the show. You probably already know what it is. Again, well, you heard the phone number. Bob@headonradio.com is the email address if you've got a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle. And just to Just to finish up with the NSA story, and I promise not to go off on a rant. We got to get to a phone call. This business with Russell Tice, you know, the guy that the NSA looked at and said, "Hey, you're crazy, Tovarish. Off to the gulag with you," after they found out that he was trying to save the Republic. He said that the number of Americans subject to eavesdropping by the NSA could be in the millions if the full range of secret NSA programs is used. Most Americans, if they conducted, you know, placed an overseas communication, more than likely they were sucked into that vacuum. I wonder what that means for telemarketers. Are we monitoring the telemarketing? And then, of course, an email from our friend David in South Carolina. So the Repigs spy on Quakers and other peace advocates. They spy on liberals and Dems. Have they ever considered that the real bad guys might be smart enough to masquerade as fellow right-wing Repiglicans? Yeah, exactly. After all, where do the kitty diddlers and kitty rapists and other monsters hang out? They don't masquerade as liberals. No. Well, they don't have to masquerade at all. They're right-wingers. They're Republicans. Mass murderers, literally, are registered upstanding Republicans. Remember the Raider? Raider, the BTK killer in Kansas? Registered Republican. That's where the killers are. And by the same token, the people that would like to kill America are probably hanging out, hiding out, pretending to be good upstanding Republicans. Let's go to the phones. Clyde is with us from WD40.com. Clyde, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. You put me on air. I was actually wanting to talk to you off air
about
that email that we've been sending back and forth. But, hey, that was a good email that you just read.
Yeah. That's the thing. We're all lost in the technology, Clyde.
I'm telling you. I mean, you know, if you really look at liberals compared to conservatives on who kills more, look at Timothy McVeigh.
Sure.
He was a right-winger.
Yep.
How many people he killed in Oklahoma, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was the worst terrorist attack on U.S. soil until September 11th, 2001, and that says a boatload.
Just
killers run together.
Yeah, oh, well, you know, you throw a little bit of conservative thinking in with a religious mix, and you're going to have a bad scenario all the way to around, you know?
Absolutely.
So...
What's new and fresh over at WD40.com, Clyde?
Well, we broke a story today about the National Guard. I had wrote you. I didn't.
Yeah.
I really didn't mean to call you about that. I was going to call you about what we've been talking about otherwise. But basically, I read the Constitution and... War Powers Act and the National Guard Charter, we have National Guard troops serving in Iraq right now against the law.
I think you're right. And I read the posting there at WD40.com. And by the way, Clyde, we've had some confusion. That's DUBYAD40.com.
And believe it or not, we're getting... a lot of hits from your listeners, you know, and, you know, hey, Bob, you're our favorite. Well, we like you, Bob. We actually love Agnes.
And, you know, that's the way the world is supposed to run, Clyde.
Well, you know, we're guys, you know, when we can sit down and have a beer with you, but we were looking at Agnes while we're doing it. You know?
She's laughing. So, you know, you're still on the good side.
Well, I hope so, because she's a real sweetheart, and she's a real good addition to your show, you know. And I really think you guys have a real good shot of getting really big. That's why we're trying at WD-40 to really promote your show. In fact, we saw Bartop is really starting to to give you some good kudos, too, also.
I noticed the email that he published on the page today, and that was pretty exciting, I got to tell you.
Well, I tell you what, you guys, a good thing, you know, I love how you do your regional stuff, you know, like the wheat farmers out here in Kansas. We don't know much about what goes on in West Virginia, but guess what? We're all Americans, right?
That's the absolute truth of it.
But as far as the story, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to kind of punch it up a little bit.
Do please.
It really took me about 2 months of some serious research, but the thing that started the whole thing off was when Bush and Governor Blanco were having the big argument over the National Guard on who was going to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I started thinking that, hey, if he's got to ask the governor, why can't the governor, you know, refuse to send any more troops, especially when they have a state of emergency?
Yep.
Well, the more I dug into it, the more I found out that, believe it or not, the way it works is when Paul Bremer turned over sovereignty to the nation of Iraq, that pretty much null and voided the resolution that they used to invade Iraq at the beginning. And according to the War Powers Act and the Posse Comitatus Act, the federal government can only federalize National Guard troops for 270 days plus 6 months if the option is needed. Well, that ended on September 25th, 2005. So all National Guard troops at that time should have been returned to their state to respond to whatever emergency state at.
Well, Clyde, one of the things that grabbed me out of the article, and I thought it was very trenchant of you, is noting the actual title of the resolution that authorized George, well, theoretically authorized George Bush to start the Iraq War. And that is, oh goodness, where is it? The title of it is, well, the important part is the fact that it's referenced as Action Against Iraq.
Well, the actual title of the resolution is the Joint Resolution for the Use of the United States Armed Forces Against Iraq. Okay, and the big part about that is, and if you pull this off, the government, which you go to whitehouse.gov and pull down that actual resolution, they actually use a capital A on the word against.
Right.
So, being as we have given sovereignty, I don't know how we give sovereignty, but we gave sovereignty back to Iraq, and we are building their military. How can we still be under that resolution because it says it's against Iraq? Right now, supposedly, there are
bosom buddy
allies.
Yeah.
You know, so we're fighting in what they call an insurgency. Basically, in my opinion, it's just a bunch of people that want a bunch of foreigners out. So we're not actually going against the nation state of Iraq.
That's the absolute truth, and I thought that was a stroke of genius to identify that, Clyde. We are not at war with Iraq, and this resolution should theoretically, I mean, major combat operations were declared mission accomplished.
Okay, and reference in the article that, you know, it could be argued that when he did his, what I like to call, codpiece promenade, with Abraham Lincoln, that could be construed as the time when that resolution would have come to an end.
Yes.
But I would like to give, believe it or not, a liberal, and believe me, it gives me acid reflux to even say it, but I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt and say, and wait until when Paul Bremer on, I believe it was June 1st, I'm going off my head here.
I think June 30, maybe.
It could very well have been. When he gets sovereignty over to Alawi for the nation of Iraq to be sovereign again, that was the cutoff point. That is when the Iraq resolution that they used to invade is over, period. I mean, we're no longer fighting against Iraq. We're fighting against what they like to call terrorists, you know. But, you know, and so that's where the Posse Comitatus, the Dick Act of 1913, I believe it was, and the War Powers Resolution should have been invoked. And according to those, 270 days plus 6 months, if he wishes to invoke the next 6 months. And that ended on September 25th, 2005.
That makes perfect sense to me. Now, the fact that these people are criminals, well, you know, I think it's a great topic for a lawsuit, frankly.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I was a member of the National Guard, or I was a member of a family member of a National Guardsman, because this has nothing to do with active military or reserve, just
right.
Strictly National Guard. I would be talking to a lawyer or something, because this is an illegal act, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first thing that they are going to try and do is there's a code out there, U.S. Code 12301, that says that a governor cannot withhold state troops during these acts of war or whatever you want to call it. And they're very specific on what they can and what they cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the big thing of it is you cannot use an active law to support an illegal action. So if they were supposed to be home by September 25th, 2005, you cannot invoke USC 12301 to support continued deployment of the National Guard troops.
Well, it flows very nicely, Clyde, and it makes sense to me. And if you had a Democratic governor out there who was willing to declare a state of emergency, and frankly, you know, a state of emergency exists in every single state of the Union because of the fact that we have been made unsafe. We are at risk now as a result of the war that George Bush started.
Well, Bob, let me bring another little facet into this. Okay, according to the United States laws, on a state of emergency or a national emergency, they can only be invoked for a single purpose. They cannot be interchanged. So when George W. Bush invoked the national emergency against Afghanistan for being attacked on 9/11, he could not use that for Iraq. That's why he had to have the Iraq resolution.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Now, the thing of it was, being as he deferred to Governor Blanco of Louisiana on control of the Louisiana troops, he set a precedent. He set the precedent in that by his own admission, there is no national emergency involved.
Mm-hmm.
There are only three ways that you can federalize National Guard troops through a national emergency, a declaration of war, or an act of Congress. There's never been a formal declaration of war. So the only act of Congress, which is kind of a gray area in itself when you're talking about a resolution, that ended when Bremer handed over sovereignty.
Exactly, because at that point in time, we were no longer at war with the government of Iraq.
Exactly. If you wanted to give him the benefit of a doubt, when he was on the Abraham Lincoln, he said major combat was over. Okay? If you want to give him the benefit of a doubt, Hussein had not been captured, and most of his henchmen had not been captured either.
And there was no so-called legitimate Iraqi government.
Exactly.
But now, let me ask you this though, Clyde. Is it possible that if you were to put this argument forward to say some sort of neocon monster that they might, if they conceded any ground to you at all, that they might say, well, you know, until they get the Constitution ratified?
No. No, we have recognized that government in front of the UN.
That's true.
We have not said we're going to wait until a constitution is been ratified before we recognize them as a nation state. So, by that admission and admitting them in front of the UN, we admit that we are no longer at war with Iraq. We are having combat operations against what they call an insurgency and foreign terror.
It doesn't wash, does it?
And no, it don't wash. I mean, you can throw all the dye in, but when it bleaches out, and says out that we're not at war with Iraq, he doesn't have a leg to stand on.
I suppose that's why, Clyde, that they, you know, keep referring to this. And, you know, they don't call it the Iraq War if they can help it. They refer to it as the Global War on Terror.
Exactly. And that in itself, you know, according to the National Securities Act, or National Emergency Act, a national emergency can only last for 2 years. And then once that 2 years is up, it takes another congressional act, not presidential, congressional act, to renew that original national emergency. So even the Afghan emergency is wiped off the board.
You know, and this line of reasoning, Clyde, goes even further, and it applies to the business with the NSA and the eavesdropping. You know, we've heard time and time again from the right wing and the Bush, you know, the Bush supporters, that, you know, the president has the inherent constitutional authority to bypass any law he wants to because of the war on terror.
Well, that's kind of funny, since that. Back in the 90s, all we heard was the president isn't above the law when it comes to a blue dress and a little bit of oral sex.
Well, that and, the bombing campaign over Kosovo. I wasn't in favor of it, but by the same token, I very well remember Tom DeLay saying, I can support the troops and not support the president. Trent Lott said the same thing.
Well, yeah, you know, these people are nothing but hypocrites. They say one thing, but they'll do another. They say they're for states' rights. But what's the first thing that happened was when it was Bush versus Gore, they went to the federal government to decide what Florida was going to do.
And it, well, Terry Schiavo.
Terry Schiavo. And then on this eavesdropping, I bet if you drop the eavesdropping and put in the words gun ownership, do you think do you think that there'd be a whole different thing being said?
Well, see, you, Clyde, you come from Kansas. I'm here in West Virginia. I'm a gun owner. And, you know, you kind of got to be to live here. I don't know how it is out there, but, you know, rural states, we like our firearms. We like our hunting, that kind of thing. And what you just said is absolutely correct. Ask a wingnut. If the president has these broad, broad powers, ask a wingnut how he would feel, since, you know, the president can do anything to win the war on terror. How would he feel if the president just said, I have the presidential authority to take away your guns? Because if he's got the presidential authority to get, you know, pretty much run roughshod over the Fourth Amendment, he can darn sure do it to the Second.
Well, exactly. And, Bob, you or any of your readers were asked to read my bio on our website, you would see where I say I am a gun-toting, red meat-eating,
yep,
NASCAR liberal.
Exactly. And you always turn left.
You know, and I own guns. I believe in gun ownership. I believe in hunting. I'm not a hunter myself. I'm more of a fisherman. But, you know, I believe if you want to go out and shoot a deer and take the time and cut him up and clean him out and
put him in the freezer
and all that, you know, I'll go up to the next Country Mart and buy me a nice big old fat T-bone, and I'll sit back and drink a couple cold ones while you're sitting there cleaning.
Exactly. But seriously, these people that support Bush have no idea how quickly he could turn on them.
Well, see, if they actually read the Patriot Act, what gets me, and I tell this guys at work, you know, because I'm a blue-collar guy. I work for a living. I only do the website because I care. But I got a bunch of guys at work. They're big gun owners and all that, and they voted for Bush because they were afraid the Democrats were going to take away their guns. If you look at the Patriot Act, there is one clause. I wish I could name you the actual section, but where they want to build a national ballistic database.
Yes, indeed.
Where you have to take your gun, fire a round. They take that round, they put it in their ballistic archive whatsoever, and then once that cutoff date is done, and you're caught with guns that you have not registered, you automatically go up on 5 years.
Yeah, at that point, you are a felon.
You are a felon. I'm a legal gun owner, and I see nothing wrong with waiting 72 hours to get a nut.
Because the deer's going to be there, the squirrel's going to be there, the turkey's going to be there. And if you don't have the foresight to
have it faster than 72 hours, you're up to no good.
Exactly. Absolutely. And, you know, but of course, and you know, sensible things like that are the kind of things, Clyde, that prove how anti-gun owner the NRA is. They're not about gun owners. They're about the gun manufacturers. You know, they're an AstroTurf outfit.
God, I am so glad I have finally heard that from somebody else. I got guys that I work with that are NRA, and, well, the NRA is out for us. The NRA is, they're going to protect me. BS.
Yeah, the NRA is no more about about individual American gun owners than AARP is about individual American old people.
Well, the way I see it is with the NRA, you know, sweaty Teddy Nugent, he better be just play guitar and leave the legislation alone because he's a moron.
Yeah. bucket loads.
I mean, you know, any responsible gun owner, if they've got children, grandchildren around, they're going to protect their guns. They're going to have trigger locks and all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody comes in my house and wants to steal something, and I got to take out a gun to shoot them, to stop them, well, something tells me they probably got a gun themselves.
And they're already shooting.
Guess what? I got homeowners insurance.
Yep. You know? Exactly.
I'll get back.
Hey, Clyde, it's so good to talk to you. We got to hit it, but anytime, and Let me go ahead and this article, everything that Clyde and I have discussed about the war, is available there at WD40.com, and it's still at the head of the list, isn't it?
Yes. Last time we tried to update pretty regular. One of the other guys might have put up a couple other stories. I couldn't tell you.
But it'll stay up there in the rotation for a couple of days, right?
It's definitely going to be up there tomorrow. We're going to probably keep it up for at least the next 2-3 days.
Great, because, you know, there are a lot of people that listen on RadioPower.org, and they won't get this till tomorrow.
Well, we had our executive meeting again tonight. You know how that goes.
Oh, absolutely. I want to be there for one of those, Clyde.
Hey, all you got to do is show up, KC, and you connect. Well,
yeah, just email me the secret.
You might have to pay for a beer, but Agnes ain't going to have to.
Sounds good. Just email me the secret handshake, will you?
Secret handshake and just show up, bro.
All right. Take care, Clyde. My best to Wally and Dookie, all right?
Okay. I like you, Bob. I really love you, Agnes.
Love you too, Clyde.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. Later on. Bye.
Bye. I love talking with those guys. Straightforward, straight shooting, you know, out of the, you know, just, daggummit, ordinary folks, working people who have, you know, we've seen the light. You know, I'm doing this every night. Clyde and Wally and Dookie are keeping WD40.com up and running. You know, guys who have to have and their families, they got a monthly budget. They gotta take care of first things first. Working people. You know, that's what this is all about. Clyde mentioned Bart Cop. You know, another working guy just out there trying to share a few facts and a little bit of truth. You know, and it's you know, Ben Birch, White Rose Society, .org. Our pals John and John Fox and Bruce Birch with Fourth Estate and All Things Reconsidered. Nobody's out there getting rich doing this. But I have a feeling we all share something in common, and what we share in common is that we, as I've mentioned on a number of occasions, we took it seriously when we sat in those little desks and we were little people and we stood and we said the Pledge of Allegiance. And we went to Sunday school or we listened to the teacher in civics class in 8th or 9th grade or whatever, and we learned about the forefathers and the great vision that they had for this nation. And yeah, I know, they every single one of the framers of the Constitution and the envisioners of this country were men with feet of clay. I know. But the basic vision was noble and good and decent. And I've still got that hanging around inside my skull. So does, you know, so do the guys at WD40.com. Again, D-U-B-Y-A-D, and then 40, WD40.com. They've got, you know, they share those values. In many ways, we share these values with some of the poor, benighted souls who were hoodooed and hoodwinked and conned into voting for George W. Bush. This, I don't know. I don't know that I'm the only one. Well, Bruce Birch and I, there's not a lot of people who are born Southerners doing talk radio from the left. But we have, you know, we've got, and Howard Dean touched on this last night in his remarks in Charleston. We are not going to have another campaign that treats the South as some sort of foregone Republican conclusion. We cannot afford to have that. You know, I get terribly, terribly angry, and I get angry because I see the way my fellow countrymen betray not only their nation but themselves when they punch the Chad, touch the screen, optical scan, whatever, you know, for some Republican. God Almighty, it has been horrifying having to that ignorant, miserable, miscreant Jeff Sessions from Alabama. What a fool! And there's nobody. there's nobody to run against him. Or nobody who will. We liberals, we progressives have been so demonized in the South when all we want is basic family values. You know, families that can feed themselves, support a family on one job, have a living wage. And that makes sense that we would want that for all working Americans. You know, you talk working Americans. Look, out of the Washington Post. Hear that? A retired 34-year-old New York City police detective. 34 years old and you're retired? A retired 34-year-old New York City police detective who spent hundreds of hours searching for September 11th victims at Ground Zero has died of a respiratory disease related to the cleanup. Yes, dear.
He was retired, honey, because evidently he had been disabled.
Yeah. Well, then the fine folks at the Associated Press need to say disabled. James Zadroga is believed to be the first emergency responder to die as a result of exposure to World Trade Center dust and debris, said Michael Palladino, president of the Detectives Endowment Association. Unfortunately, Palladino said, I don't think he's going to be the last. Working people cleaned up the mess that George Bush brought on us with 9/11. And yeah, I do hold him, I hold him responsible, sure. I hold him negligently responsible. I hold him grossly, recklessly responsible. There were terrible, terrible toxins in the rubble of the World Trade Center. And as a result of that, this 34-year-old detective died. Hey, you remember the... Wait a minute. Yep. Do you remember how the Bush administration fought and screamed and cussed and carried on demanding that the state of New York return the federal monies that were sent to them for the purposes of paying workers' compensation, perhaps occupational pneumoconiosis claims, for people who had breathed that crap? God, they wanted that money back for their war in Iraq. These union people cleaned up 9/11. Union people breathed it almost to a man and to a woman. The first responders, the people who dug through the rubble looking for body parts, those were working Americans. Those weren't George Bush's haves and have mores. Damn. Just damn. And this fella's dead. Let's go to the phones. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on. Hey, Wayne. Okay, well, let's take a break then while we sort this out. Yeah, you're going to have this. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I mentioned that James Zadroga, the first casualty of the 9/11 toxic cleanup. We know a little bit here in the hills of West Virginia about what James Zadroga's last days were like. He had black lung disease from cleaning up at 9/11. At the World Trade Center site. He had mercury on the brain. He worked 16 hours a day in rescue and recovery efforts the first month after the September 11, 2001 attacks, and the Bush administration wanted to take the money away that would have supported him and his family in his disability. His wife, you know, if you know, from time to time we all look up and go, you know, my life really sucks. Guess what? No, it doesn't. Mr. Zadroga's life kind of sucked. His wife died of cancer in late 2004. He had a 4-year-old daughter when he passed away. This is the Bush administration's idea of, you know, well, you know, these things happen in a war on terror. Remember how the Environmental Protection Agency said, everything is safe at the World Trade Center cleanup site? You remember that? No, it wasn't. It was poisonous. And you know what? I said we know a little bit about this black lung business in West Virginia. Well, by God, we do. And there will be an army of doctors paid for to disavow any further claims by Mr. Zadroga's estate. To take care of that little 4-year-old girl. Tell me again about the family values of the Republicans. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is back with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm great. You?
Well, I don't know anymore. You run too much stuff through here. God.
Hard to keep up.
I had one thought, and I went through 15 others while you're talking and all that.
Well, see, that's the hell of being on hold.
Yeah, it is the hell of being on hold. Well, I don't know where the heck to start. Brother Jim, I disagree. It's time to call a son of a bitch a son of a bitch, and I apologize for saying what I just said.
No, that's okay.
But, you know,
Agnes didn't even reach for the button.
Don't work.
Yeah.
You know, in that, and these people are evil. I mean, look what they're doing.
They're evil.
You know, and you're talking about the people that breathed and the cleanup. Who were a lot of those people?
Union people.
Transit workers.
Yeah, transit workers, cops.
Under severe attack.
Yeah.
From the very people that a few months ago were praising them. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but if I was...
Well, yeah, they're heroes until they stand up on their hind legs, Wayne. You know, that's the way it is with any working man or woman.
I was, and I meant to email it to you, and I didn't a couple of weeks ago, but I found an article that was rather surprising. Actually, the transit workers made some very, very significant gains out of this.
Really?
Now, oh, yes, they did. And I was looking for the article while I was on hold, and I couldn't find it. But I will find it, and, you know, because I want to back up what I'm saying and send it to you. They did. They made some very significant gains. And they gave up something, too. I mean, you know, it was a two-way street, but that's what it's all about. You know, what people... am I still on the air?
Yeah, you're here.
Okay. There was a noise that went away. And you know, that's what life is about, is a compromise. But then getting into the other thing, with the Alito thing, and with all these things, and now they're accusing that, you know, you guys were talking earlier about this is the time for the Democrats to stand up.
Right.
And this is.
If it doesn't happen now, there's no sense in saying we'll stand up later.
No, there isn't. And then I'm going to seriously look at, I don't know, trying to find some people that I think are Democrats, because if we don't stand now, all you guys are in, you know, very questionable territory.
Yeah, well,
where
I mean,
you stand.
Yeah,
this is it. You know, they're accusing us of going over the line. Have the Democrats gone over the line?
Well, you know, our buddy Howard Dean. This is from editor and publisher Wayne. Today or yesterday, rather, Scotty McClellan said that Howard Dean's war remarks are irresponsible.
How about irresponsible lying about the reasons to go into this war? Is lying not irresponsible?
Sure. No, that's not irresponsible. That's evil.
That is evil. And that's what these people are. And that's what Scotty McClellan is. Or whatever the heck his name.
Yeah, McClellan, but he's irresponsible in his remarks because he dares to criticize dear leader.
Right, exactly. Well, and now today, you know, they're saying, questioning Judge Alito on, you know, did you vote this way? Yes. Well, that's going over the line. That you ask him to tell the truth. Telling the truth has become going over the line.
Yeah, well, telling, demanding that that's too broad a statement, Wayne.
Well,
telling the truth is demanding that someone tell the truth is over the line if the person you're demanding to tell that they tell the truth is a Republican.
Well,
if, however, you want to put somebody under oath and demand that they tell the truth about a consensual sex act and that person happens to be a Democrat, that is the pursuit of justice.
There you go. There you go.
Listen, see how it works?
I don't know how much time we have left.
No, you got a couple of minutes.
I would call my senators and tell them to vote against Judge Alito.
Yeah, and I'm not going. Yeah, there's no sense in saying what we will or will not do if they vote for him. Although I've got a pretty sneaky suspicion, we'll see a split senatorial vote. We'll see one out of West Virginia. We'll see one vote against and one vote for. That's my prediction.
Oh, gosh. That ain't good enough.
No, no.
That ain't good enough, you know. And who used to say, Mr. T, I pity the fool.
Yeah, I pity, yeah.
I'm serious, too. I'm sorry.
Well, you know,
if one of our senators votes for Judge Alito, I'll work to replace him.
Yeah.
With somebody that I consider a Democrat, whoever that may be.
The Republic is in danger. And I'm not.
It is in danger. That's exactly right. It's time for people to stand up. It's time to, for people to stand up. And listen, we got a minute here. I want to, Brother Jim, who calls and who I disagreed with a second ago, also did a very good thing. You know, I'm fighting, and this is a West Virginia issue for the rest of the world. You know, I'm fighting this Mountain State University grant.
Yeah, where they're
that
giving.
They got from Senator Byrd for $4 million to round it off and saying it isn't prevailing wage. And I'm fighting that.
Yeah. This is public money for a building on a campus of a university that calls itself, it calls itself private.
Private, so that that could...
so that they can have their 501c3 tax-exempt status.
No, they're public, so they can have that.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah,
they're
okay.
Private when it comes to paying prevailing wage.
Right.
That's how they do that.
Yeah, okay, I had it backwards.
Yeah, you know. We don't want to pay any taxes, so we're supported by you.
Yeah, they're going to build a health sciences building that they want the workers who build it not to be able to afford to use.
Right. If they what they call it a medical technology tower, but they want to build it with a bunch of people who, if they do in fact develop some medical technology, the people that build it can't have it because they don't have health insurance.
Don't have health insurance and didn't have a living wage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm a mean man because I want, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and there's another thing. If what I'm trying to fight for is prevailing wage.
Right.
And that does not mean union.
No.
That means that whether a union construction company gets it or a non-union construction company gets it, the workers have enough money. They have a living wage. They can afford health insurance and a pension plan. That's what that means.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean union. It means workers.
Yeah, and when you say prevailing wage, the way that most people might identify with that, Wayne, prevailing wage is what George Bush tried to cancel in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. On a federal level, that's the Davis-Bacon Act.
Right. I really feel sorry for them people, but I think they should rebuild that area, but they shouldn't make any money.
Right.
They shouldn't be able to, you know, have a living wage and health insurance and pension.
Yeah, well, you know, the last time the levees collapsed in 1927, they used slave labor to rebuild them. Why not do it this time through?
He's the same, he's in the same boat as Robinson.
Yeah.
The preacher, right?
Well,
let them live, but they don't really deserve to have it because this is God's wrath on them for liking jazz and drinking and stuff.
Yeah.
Ain't that the same thing?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Oh, man, it makes my head hurt. But
all right, buddy, I hope I didn't make a fool out of myself.
Nah, you did.
Whatever.
You always do a great job, Wayne, and I enjoy hearing from you. You take care now, all right?
All right, brother, I'll be talking to you.
All right, later.
Bye.
All right, that's the show for tonight. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, we talk about some local stuff because the fight, you know, there are national fights and there are local fights, and the local fights have national flavor. Our buddy Wayne is fighting for people to earn a decent living wage in Beckley. You think that fight's not going on in 49 other states, too? God knows the chance of earning a living wage in a construction job is a hell of a lot less in the red states. Yes, sir. And it's all just, you know, we're all just workers. Just workers. If somebody else signs your paycheck, you're a worker, whether you realize it or not. You get a pay stub, you're a worker. Now, the show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. The whole kit and caboodle was engineered by Randy Kerbway. The streaming mechanism that you listen to was organized and put together and is continuously managed by our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He also manages the archives of this and many other liberal talk radio programs. Remember, Ben, when you feel like giving somebody some money, because he's not going to send you a bill. He's not going to be pushy. We are terribly, terribly grateful also to Shelby at RadioPower.org. Love to have the Radio Power audience with us. The show is brought to you tonight and every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Mm-hmm.